When everyone's on the same page, getting things done at work is easy. Make a bigger impact at work with Grammarly. Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that allows your team to make their point and move faster. You can even save time by going from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds. Join the 96% of Grammarly users that say it helps them craft more impactful writing. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This show is brought to you by The Makery, the podcast network for makers.
Hello and welcome to XYZ, the podcast for CNC, machining, automation, space, and general tomfoolery. How are you, Craig?
I'm good. I'm really good. Really happy. It's a good week. Very good week.
Oh, that's good. What made it so good?
I don't know. I've got out of the funk that I've been in for the last few weeks. And things are going well here in the shop. I'm piling through a bunch of orders, which is really nice. News on the sort of new house is things are moving quickly there as well. And for the first time, I'd say in probably a year, I feel 100%.
Oh, that's good.
I think this whole, you know, in and out of lockdown and all the rest of it, it's just been, you know, playing on everybody, not just myself. But I haven't been myself for a long time. And I'm just feeling really positive and chipper. So
that's good.
It's all good. What about yourself?
Oh, a little bit the opposite.
Oh, jeez, I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. So we, as you know, we got a puppy end of January.
Yes.
And, oh my God, it's just so much work. So my girlfriend's doing her Masters of Teaching right now. And she's tutoring, she's doing schoolwork, and she's actually teaching like online classes at the same, like wow. All at once.
Yeah.
So I volunteered to do extra puppy work, and I'm not really a morning person, but right now I'm up at like 7 every day for the first walk, and then it's just a bit much.
Well, not to make you feel any worse, we've got a 16-year-old Jack Russell, and things Aww. Don't get easier. This thing, he no longer brings joy to us, we discovered the other day.
Oh, no.
He's just a constant pain of pissing and shitting and barking and, it doesn't get easier.
Well, and you've got twins. Yeah. as well. Like, I honestly don't know how parents do it. I would be one of those people you see on the news. That's why I don't have kids. Man leaves family and moves to another country.
Yeah. Oh, the thought has come to my mind a few times, but no.
Yeah, and with every parent. The parents that say it hasn't. They're lying.
Work-wise, what's been going on?
Well, guess what, Craig? I got a lathe.
I did see. And it looks a cracker as well.
Yeah, it looks good. It's had a little bit of a hard life in some ways because it came out of a high school. So, kids have run it into the chuck and all sorts of stuff. But it doesn't look like it's actually had much use, which means, you know, the bits that need to be accurate are still accurate.
Yeah,
hopefully. It looks fingers crossed.
Very much like, and you did mention one last week, the Colchester lathe looks very much like them that we had in school. We had Colchester lathes over here,
right.
And it looks very, very similar. And yeah, everybody just using that power feed and going into the chuck. And
yeah, exactly, exactly. So yeah, I'm super excited about that. I started pulling it apart yesterday. It needs a little bit of work. It needs some work just for common sense, and then it needs some iron work.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. To make it better than new, I assume.
Yeah, exactly.
You could eat your dinner off it. Okay. That's fair enough.
Plus the motor on it is shot. It's like it works, but it sounds like someone's dumped a barrel of gravel in there.
Oh.
You know? Like, yeah. So that's fine.
Would that be three-phase as well, then?
It is, yeah.
Yeah.
So I tested it by hooking it up to the variable frequency drive that I use for my grinder and running it.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I was just like, ooh, that doesn't sound good. But that's fine. Like, the older motors like that are actually not rated for use with a variable frequency drive. A lot of the time they will work, but the insulation wasn't, the insulation on the windings in the motor was not spec'd for use with a variable frequency drive.
Right.
So sometimes they can be fine forever. Sometimes not so much. So I was thinking about replacing it, and now I just will. So that's fine.
Yeah. I only mentioned three phase because the new house that we built, we had the electricity turned on the other day. And the way it works over here in France is they're responsible for coming into the house. And then anything else is obviously up to you. So they turned it on. So I then bought a new distribution box. And I'm sort of okay with electrics. So, you know, I could put the distribution box in and I can do stuff kind of thing. Went and then realized, oh, they've turned it on and they've kept it as three phase. A lot of the old sort of farmhouses and big barns, that kind of thing around here, were a three phase, and a lot of them they just haven't converted. So we needed them to come back. I was thinking maybe keep three phase in the shop, but I mean, we run 240 here. We're not like, you know, 110 wimps like you guys anyway. So I think,
but
no,
all of
just
the big machinery that you want to get in the future will be
eventually.
Yeah, dude, but like you'll pay so much money to get it put back in. Keep it.
I know. We've already made the decision. It's they're pulling it out and sticking single phase in.
Oh, I got to disagree with you on this one, you big dummy.
A lot of it is standing charges as well. So you pay a lot of standing charges here in France. Electricity isn't that expensive, but your standing charge is. And the standing charge for three phase is a lot more than single phase.
And by standing charge, you mean like monthly fees for connection?
Exactly, and just for having their service, yeah. So not by how much you consume, but literally just for having a connection with them. So, financially, it made a lot of sense. Just get rid of it, unfortunately.
Bloody hell, mate. There are people that would kill to be in your position.
Yeah, I mean,
like, I had to pay so much money to get three-phase into my current shop.
Yeah, it was one of those things where I was there, and you know, I had the new distribution board in my hand, and you know when you go to do a job and you're quite excited, you got everything you need. You're like, okay. Then I discovered that, and I was just like, oh shit! And I was thinking, well, should I just put one phase on and leave the other two just hanging? And I was like, no, I better not. So we made the call, and they're changing it back.
yeah,
not good. In other electrical news this week, my laser went bang. Actually, it went bang, bang.
Oh, no.
Twice, very quickly, and smelt of smoke, the whole, you know, the usual sort of burning smell of electrics.
Did it actually make a bang noise?
Twice, yes. In very fast succession.
Have you had a look inside to see what's going on?
I have, and I'm very lucky. It's the power supply. So it hasn't affected the main laser, and the main laser has its own sort of huge, it looks like a huge power supply. It probably is, but there's the standard, it's almost like a PC power supply inside, and it was one with three supplies on it, so 24 volt, 12 volt and 5 volt, and it went bang twice, and so I've got a new power supply on its way. And we're hoping that's the only damage that it did. But we think so. And
did you buy
a good power supply,
like a Meanwell or something?
It's just a generic sort of Chinese power supply. I don't know what it is. Yeah, so they're actually sending me... this is how confident they are, the Chinese manufacturers. They're sending me two.
Oh, okay. They're sending you warranty parts. Gotcha.
Yeah, but I can't complain about that. I've said this before, things have gone wrong with the machine, but every time they're just on it. And, you know, with the time difference that we have, it's generally sort of 2 or 3 in the morning when I'm contacting them. And immediately, it's all over WhatsApp, their support. And they're just like, we're going to take care of it. We're going to send two to you immediately. I can't complain, but it's just one of those things. It's like, I'm in the middle of a job where I need the laser. And weirdly, it's not a job for me. It's a job for another knife maker. I'm doing him a little favor. And it went bang. And I was like, oh, shit.
And he needs it next week or something.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So I'm doing the whole ghosting thing at the moment, you know?
I stole your knives. You'll never hear from me again.
Oh, not knives. Not no. These are little brass plates that he wants for some sort of package. I'm not sure what it's for. But anyway.
Oh, I didn't even think about it. What's the largest area that you can engrave on your laser?
300 mil by 300 mil.
Oh, wow. You can get big. Okay.
Yes, yeah. I mean, what you get different lenses on the top of the laser, and they'll change the sort of focal width, as you would with a camera, I suppose.
Yep.
But the wider you make the focal range, the less power of the laser.
Right.
So I could actually get a lens which would give me much much wider area to mark. Right. But yeah, it does reduce power quite significantly, I think.
Well, because a lot of the fiber laser markers that I've seen, their marking area is only like 4 inches by 4 inches or something like that.
Yes, yeah. And they're generally, the lower powered sort of 20, 30-watt ones.
Right.
I intentionally went for the 50-watt. I mean, a 20-watt would do what I need. It would mark steel more than well enough. But yeah, I've gone with a 50. It will give me that larger sort of area to play with.
Well, I might have to. I've got a little job for you then, maybe.
Okay.
Yeah, once you get your laser back up and running. One of the things that I want to do for the lathe is all of the plates that have like information for like the gearbox and that kind of stuff. I've all been smashed a million times by kids, you know. So they're legible, but like the edges are a bit smushed and stuff. So I was going to replace them. And a really nice way to do that is to laser etch like a piece of brass or aluminum.
A brass
and
plate,
then you fill the low spots with paint. And polish the top.
Oh, yes, yeah.
So, but I don't have a laser.
Well, hopefully I can certainly help with that in 4 to 6 weeks when the post comes.
Oh, geez, 4 to 6 weeks for the replacement parts?
Yeah, it's a real, real pain.
Man, honestly, like, so I'm trying to think of the electronics supplier that you would use in Europe. I think it's like RS Components.
RS Components, they're in the UK, yes.
Okay, so go to RS Components. Look for Meanwell, you know, filtered by the voltages and the amperages that you need, and you'll have a replacement power supply in like 2 days, and it'll be something that won't blow up.
Okay, but that could well be £800.
No. a little power supply like that, it you know, like you'd probably be paying like less than $100 for it.
Oh, right. Okay, I shall have a look. I didn't even think to look there. I went straight to Amazon, which is my... Right. Shopping of choice, being stuck in the middle of nowhere here, and didn't even think of that. But
I don't know if you guys have DigiKey in Europe, but so in North America, if you're looking for electronic components, DigiKey is the place. So they're like, you know, if I want like a power supply, I'll get it tomorrow for $8 shipping, and you know, they have like a search tool that'll just let me say like, okay, I want like 110 volt input, I want 12 volt out at 50 amps, and then it'll just give me like all the options.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah. Cool. I shall certainly do that as soon as we get off the line.
Oh yeah, you don't want to wait 6 weeks to be back up and running. That's brutal.
I know. It's the worst. But again, it's one of those warrantied parts. But I know it'll probably bang again, but I know it'll always be warrantied. Whereas if I put my own in, maybe not so. But
well, yeah, I mean, so the thing you have to worry about is that like next time it goes bang, it might take something else with it.
Yes. Yeah.
Right. So yeah, personally, I'd be tending toward the little upgrade there. You know?
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, yeah. What else have I been doing apart from blowing electrical stuff up? I told you about the bar that we're having in the new house, didn't I?
No.
Okay. So I've always sort of brewed beer, and just like a hobby, and I've got like a tap here in my shop, so on a Friday afternoon I can draw a beer and all that kind of thing. But we've got loads of barns with the new house, and one of the barns we de-eared for my wife to have her office was going to be in this barn. But it's sort of connected to the house, not directly. You need to get out the house and round, but the walls are connected. So she was like, oh, well, actually I'd prefer to be sort of away from the house. You know, which makes sense if you're working, you know. And it actually, that wall actually backs onto what will be my workshop as well. So there could be a bit of noise or leakage in. Right. So we decided, so she's going to have a cabin built in the sort of grounds there. And I'm going to have the barn now as a pub, which is like the coolest thing ever for me. I'm really
in
pleased.
The grounds. There's going to be a cabin in the grounds. Listen to you. Living your best life over there, buddy.
There's a lot of work to be done, believe me. A lot. But anyway, so I've gone down this whole rabbit hole of, you know, having not just like a shitty little bar, but have it actually having it as a pub, you know, with multiple taps and all the rest of it.
Like open to the public kind of thing, or?
Well, yeah, we wouldn't be licensed, so it would be...
Speakeasy.
Yeah, yeah. Craig's Moonshine would served. So I've been thinking of ways to do this. And, you know, at the moment, I run CO2 bottles and I've got kegs and all that. And that's what I do anyway. But I was thinking, how can I expand upon this? And what they sell in France, they sell they're not pre-carbonated, actually. They're kegs, but they've got a CO2 canister in there with basically with carbon in there. And as you drink the keg, it releases more CO2. So it's sort of self-carbonating as you're drinking it. And these are dirt cheap over here in France.
Oh,
so I'm thinking, well, it's nice to brew my own beer, but it takes a long time. And, you know, if I always want fresh stuff on tap, I don't want to be brewing every week. So I thought, well, how could I use these kegs with my current setup? So I designed and 3D printed a sort of cap for these kegs, which will allow me to put my own CO2 in and pour beer from a tap. So these will literally be in a fridge under the bar with pipes coming up straight to the tap, so on tap. And you get really good beer. Really, really cheap. So I'm really pleased that it worked. And this is the biggest sort of 3D print that I've done, actually. It only just fit on the bed of the Prusa Mini. So I think it's about 6 inches in circumference, this circle that fits on top of the keg, and maybe about 5 inches high. And it's virtually solid. So this was like an 18-hour print.
Is this, I guess that part would be under pressure too, right?
No, so it's not under pressure. The way these kegs work, they have a sort of a tap already fitted to them on the top. So what this does, it sort of holds that tap down whilst allowing me to put in my own stuff. So there's no actual pressure on the 3D print. But I'm really pleased with it because it's one of those things, you know, when you design something and you print it and it's a physical thing that actually works and does and solves a problem. So
yeah, it's always nice.
Yeah, I'm really pleased, and the fact that the quality of the print, I know I keep saying about this Prusa Mini, about the quality, but it's incredible. You wouldn't think it was 3D printed. You can barely see the layer lines. And I did this in what they call their draft quality, which is, you know, the fastest quality with 0.20 layers. So I'm really pleased with it. So yeah, so it's been a fruitful week.
Nice. Always good.
Yeah.
Yeah, this week's been more frustrating for me because I feel like my schedule's just been really disrupted. So, like, I'm on top of things, but not as on top of things as I could be, I guess.
Because last week you'd at a point where, right, I'm ahead of the game, and now we're delivering within 24 hours.
Yeah, and I'm still kind of there, but like, you know, now I've got a couple of like custom handle combos that I have to make. And just it's been like finding time for that has been honestly, like, things are going pretty well. One of the problems I have is like when there's a new toy in the shop, like the lathe, all I want to do is
put all your attention there.
Yeah, I just want to fix it, and, you know, I want to pat it, and I want to name it, and, you know.
Well, first of all, the name, have you got a name yet?
Lily. It's gonna be Lily the lathe.
Yeah, nice. Nice. So what is the overall point? What's the end goal with the lathe? Have you got a product in mind that you'll be making?
Yeah, I mean the little spindle that we've been talking about.
Right, yes.
Yeah, that's going to be one of the big ones. And then one of the problems is you need a lathe to make a lathe. So I would really like to make a really like miniature, and when I say miniature, I mean like super miniature, like, you know, 12 inches by 12 inches kind of size, like a little gang tool lathe for making a CNC lathe for making my handle fasteners.
Oh, okay, nice. So basically like Corby's, you'd make your own Corby's.
Yeah, exactly.
Nice.
Yeah,
nice.
So like they have a couple of tiny little lathes, like the TAG lathes that you can convert to CNC, but they don't come with spindles that are really suitable for like running automated.
Right.
So you want like a collet spindle, like a 3C collet, with a what they call a pneumatic collet closer. So you can, the machine itself can actually tighten and loosen the collet.
Right. Okay. So you're talking the sort of the size lathes that like pen makers use and jewelers make.
Yeah. Exactly.
Right.
Okay. So like, because I'm never gonna make you know, even once I get into folders, I'm never going to make a part that's over like half an inch in diameter.
Yeah.
So, you know, for a while I had a hard inch GT. I don't know if you ever saw that, but I bought this lathe off the guy that moved all the stuff into my last shop. He was like, "Oh, I've got a couple of these hard inch lathes," and I was like, "Which ones are they?" And he's like, "Oh, it's a GT, like so one of their precision gang tool lathe." And these things are like the Rolls Royce of gang tool lathes. And I was like, right. "How much do you want for it?" And he's like, "I don't know, $3,000." Fuck yeah, buddy, bring it in. So I mean, this thing was beautiful. Like it weighed like almost twice as much as my milling machine, and it was smaller.
Wow.
But its maximum capacity was, I think, 1 3/8 of an inch. So, like, 35 millimeters.
So, for such a big thing, what was the sort of the turning length on it?
Well, I mean, on a machine like that, you would really only make parts that are, you know, 2 inches long or less.
Jeez.
But, like, that thing will just, like, hold, you know, a couple of microns. Over the course of a whole day in and day out, you know. So, but you know, that's a pretty small lathe, relatively speaking, and it's still massive overkill for what I need, you know. So, I'd like to build like smaller than that doesn't really exist. There's a couple of lathes. I think there's one made by Ganesh. Which is like a little, it's really, I saw one at a machinery show. It's really, really cute. This thing's like, you know, 3 feet on a side, weighs a couple of thousand pounds, little CNC lathe, but even that's still overkill for what I need.
Yeah. So stop a second. You've got, okay.
Yes, sir. Sorry, sir.
You've got your DLC coater machine, which you want to make.
Yeah.
You've got the CNC machine you want to make for your sandblasting.
Yep.
You now want to make a CNC lathe.
Yeah.
And you also want to make a sort of desktop VMC, I suppose.
Yep.
do you think you need to just stop and maybe pick one? And
yes. Yeah, I do. Yeah, I mean, basically what I try to do with these projects is I push, you know, a couple of things forward at the same time, little bit by little bit, you know.
Yeah.
So, like, when something grabs my attention, I'll push forward on it for a bit and then, you know, maybe switch gears. But yeah, the biggest priorities are the DLC coating system and the sandblasting robot.
Right. sandblasting robot.
But yeah, like, whatever, man. Like, that's honestly, like, that's my best life, you know? Like, the long-term dream is to have the knife-making business support my like research and development effort, you know?
Yeah.
So I just get to like make fun machinery and then release it as open source. And
nice. So we'll in CNC news of the week, Harry and Meghan, what do we think?
when you wrote that in the podcast notes, and I honestly don't even watch the news, so I had to think for a minute.
Really?
Who are these people? Pretty sure they're British royalty, aren't they?
They were. That's the big news. They were.
Oh, they were? What did they do? They.
Let's not go into that. They run away to Canada to begin with. I mean, what fools would do that? Yeah, that was just a joke. CNC Fine. News. So this week I've been watching, almost binge watching in the evenings, something called Flatpak Mansions on Netflix. And it's a British show, which was originally on Channel 4.
Okay.
I don't know if you know of it, but basically they follow people who are making these like modular houses, and they're generally all built with CNC machines sort of off-site.
Right.
Once they're completed, they'll bring them to the site and they'll put them up in like 3 days. It's crazy. But what's really interesting is they make these sort of modular panels, and you'd imagine, you know, a house made of modular panels is going to be pretty square and grid-like. But some of these, they look like castles that have been there forever. They're incredible. Right. But everything is done. So these panels, they're pre-wired. They've even got the sockets, the outlets, you know, wired, and they just snap these together in the things. I mean, some of the floor panels are carpeted. it's just incredible. And each week it's a different house with a different company who make it. And there's weirdly, a lot of them seem to be in Germany. Germany and the Netherlands, right. These companies, and you can sort of spec your house online. They'll make it and they'll deliver it and put it up in a couple of days. It's just amazing. But one of them was really cool because they were two students, university students. They were studying, I think it was architecture and design, that kind of stuff.
Okay.
And for one of their projects, they were like, well, we can't afford a house of our own, so we'll build our own house. So they managed to get enough money together to buy a little bit of land. And okay. What they did, they then bought a big, basically just a big flatbed CNC machine, which was like a big, you know, the big router style CNC they use for wood. And they put that in a couple of shipping containers actually on the site, and they built their house sort of around them. It was amazing. And the actual container then stayed in the house, and they used that as part of an office within the house, which was quite incredible. But it was just amazing to see how everything was, the tolerances were incredible. Mm-hmm. You know, and you just think, why would anybody now build with traditional sort of bricks and mortar where, you know, tolerances there's no such thing really as a tolerance in these things, you know, right. Probably by the foot, if anything. It's just incredible how fast it was and how they can have a full sort of render of their house before mm-hmm. they've even turned a machine on. You know, it was just really fascinating. And I think having, you know, such a CNC machine of that sort of size, the possibilities that opens, you know, it's like at the moment we're looking at kitchens for the new house. Imagine we found the kitchen we want. Now let's just press print and make it, you know, on site. I don't know. It was just really fascinating to watch, and I've probably binge watched probably 9 of these this week. It's been incredible.
I'll have to check it out. Well, if you'd kept your 3-phase power, you could have gotten a big CNC router and done that.
Exactly. In the garden under a tent. That's how some of these were doing it as well. It was just incredible. And you see these panels on the back of a big sort of flatbed truck being delivered, and you can see like lamp fittings and the carpet on them. It's just incredible.
Yeah, I've seen a couple of like factory tours of places that build modular homes, and like as you said, like I don't after seeing that, I don't really understand why you do it any other way, because the labor saving, building a home is like, I don't know what the exact percentage is, but it's got to be at least 50% labor, probably more like 70.
I would have thought so. Yeah, it's a new home. Yeah.
And building them in a, you know, like a factory like that designed to just make those big panels makes it so much faster.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and they were showing the people sort of designing, and they were literally just almost like answering questionnaires online. And then it's sort of coming up with a design for them. They're like, wow, we could actually have the light fitting over there. And they're just dragging it over. And they said, okay, we sign off on that. Off we go. And then, you know, 6 weeks later, they arrive on site with your house, put it up.
It's amazing.
Incredible. So I think that happens a lot more in, I wouldn't say, you know, that sort of style, but that sort of timber framed paneled housing happens a lot more in sort of warmer climates as opposed to, you know, other places where you couldn't. But it was incredible. And that sort of got me down a bit of a rabbit hole then of, you know, houses that are built with sort of CNC technology. Mm. And then, you know, you can see, you know, 3D printers that are using you know, mortar and concrete.
Yeah, the
and
big
so
concrete
on.
Ones. Yeah, they're super cool, eh?
Unbelievable. No more like
3D
builders
printing
arses.
Weird houses. Yeah.
No more builders' arses leaning over, using the toilet, and farting and promising to be done next Friday when you know they won't. Just get the machines in. That's what I say.
Yeah, I mean, 100%. Well, I mean, my girlfriend and I are looking at moving outside of the city at some point, and. Like, we'd really like to build a house, because I kind of hate how most houses are made. You know, it's just like stick frame construction with some like vinyl siding on it, and they're just kind of bullshit designed to last for like 20 years. You know, I really want to build a house that'll like, you know, give a tank problems.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, we're sort of going through that now with our new house, so. We've ripped out the whole of the bottom floor and exposed the beams, which are basically the whole house is built on, and they have rotten. So there's new beams going in, and when you can see the hole of the floor just opened up like this, it's just a huge hole in the floor.
Right.
So like, so we're speaking to the contractors and we're speaking to suppliers and so on. They're like, well, once the beams are down, you obviously need new flooring down and so on. They're like, well, you could go for, you know, a pine boards. And they're like, well, how long will they last? They're like, well, they'll outlast you, sort of, you know, probably 50, 60 years.
Right.
And I'm like, well, they're the cheapest option. That, you know, common sense would be just go with that. But, you know, yeah, like you said, you want something to last way beyond your own needs, you know?
Yeah.
So, like, you know, going up to oak then was, you know, so much more money. And, oh, yeah, it's just...
Well, and in North America, too, it like, some stuff... So, coming from Australia to North America, there's this big shock where, like, all of the houses here have shingles.
Yes.
So, they're like, little, you know, asphalt squares.
Mm.
And every time the wind blows hard, they all fly off the roof, you know? And then, like, even if nothing else goes wrong, you still have to replace them every 10 years or so.
Yeah, yeah.
Which just blows my mind. Like, if for a whole bunch of reasons, those things would never, ever work in Australia. So, like, one of the big ways that bushfires burn down houses in Australia is that you get, like, embers carried on the wind that will then land on your roof. And if your roof is made from flammable asphalt, then... your house is going to burn down from the top down, you know?
Wow.
So,
Do you have Grand Designs over there, the TV show?
I've seen it. My mum likes it.
Right, okay. So, it's I think it originated in Britain. It's been going for sort of 20 years, and then it's quite... I enjoy it, and the host, Kevin, there, he's seen all sorts of houses. But I love the ones, and we certainly don't get them over here in France, the sort of modern ones, and they're using, you know, zinc metal sheeting for their roofs and for their sides. They look very sort of industrial, that kind of thing.
Yeah, and that's super common in Australia. Like
really, yeah.
Corrugated iron roofs, yeah, are very, very common.
Mm. Yeah.
And they last for ages. They last for a really long time.
Exactly, I can imagine so, yeah. But I don't know, we've got this notion in our head of how a house should look, and people are still building those sort of traditional designs. And idiots like me are taking on 300-year-old houses and trying to make them look as if they were still 300 years old, but yeah.
Crazy Fools. Bastard. You should just bulldoze it and start from
scratch. I know, you know? Yeah. The
probably
locals
be,
would love
probably
that,
be cheaper.
It probably would be, yeah, yeah. So we've had engagement. We've had engagement from the filthy public. So this is from Ataraxia Guitars, I think it's Ataraxia or something like that. Anyway, his name is Leo Penderson. Anyway,
mm-hmm.
And he says Aaron was asking about a CAD drape function, which you're talking about for your sheaths.
Yeah.
So he said, I thought I'd share Rhino 3D's command. It's called drape. And he says, I'm enjoying the podcast very much. In one of the early episodes, Aaron mentioned a good source of relatively inexpensive ball screws too, but didn't reveal the actual source. So stop teasing us. Where do you get your ball screws? It's a very personal question. And he says, my name is Leo Penderson. I'm on Bowen Island on the west coast of BC, Canada. What's BC?
Mm-hmm. British Columbia.
British Columbia, Canada. Okay. I'm working on setting up an electric guitar production process using lots of CNC router and milling processes. Nice.
Yeah.
Again, thanks for a great podcast. So, yeah, first of all, have you heard of drape?
I have seen a very quick demo of it. I haven't tried it yet. I should. It looked like it was only for, like, non-solid surfaces. So it would just be like a... Anyway, I'm speaking out my ass here. I have to go and try it.
He sent a link, and I'll put that in the show notes if anybody else listening is interested in that as well. But he also mentioned your ball screws, which I thought was very personal of him. Where do you get them?
Where do I get them? So I just put together a list of... we'll put them in the show notes, but... There's three places that I have bought stuff from recently, and so, I mean, to be clear, I haven't used these in a machine yet, so I can't, like, 1,000% vouch for their quality, but just from, like, an initial inspection, they look really good.
Mm.
So the ball screw came from a place called Service Quality After Sales Store.
That's got Alibaba written all over it.
Yeah, yeah. So that was AliExpress, But that was $85 for a 450mm long ball screw. And it was a 1605 ball screw. So that's 16mm diameter and 5mm pitch. And that came with thrust bearings, an end bearing, and an integrated stepper mount for $85, which is crazy. For linear rails, there's another one called Sinwinin Store. They all have the craziest names. And then, yeah, it was like $90 US for a pair of 25 millimeter linear rails, 500 millimeters long. And 25 millimeter rails are big. Really big. That's like the size that goes in my VMC. They're like beefy boys. You know?
That's nearly an inch. Yeah.
Yeah, it is an inch, Greg. Close enough. 0.4 millimeters away.
Yes, exactly.
And then, yeah, for closed loop steppers, I bought them from a company called Stepper Online. So their website is omc-stepperonline.com. And there it was $90 US for a 3 Newton meter closed loop stepper system. Yeah, so like they all seem like really good sources. So we'll put them in the show notes. But yeah, hopefully I'll actually be doing something with those parts soon.
Cool. And also, if you want to know more about the differences between, you know, ball screws, linear rails, and all the rest of it, you made a video, didn't you? I think the week before last.
Yes. Yeah.
Which is up where you talk a bit more in detail about these.
Yeah. So I was rebuilding one of the axes on my vertical machining center. And part of that is like, you know, talking about ball screws and how they work and so on. So yeah, absolutely a good source if you want to learn more about them.
Nice. What's the idea with the YouTube channel? Is that literally just to share what you know? Do you enjoy the process? Do you have plans for the future? You've got a lot of engagement on your channel. You know, it's a successful channel. What's the end goal there?
Good question. Hard question, Greg. Yeah, I mean, it's always really been about just kind of sharing what I'm doing, like what I have in process, what I'm working on, sharing knowledge. I do get most of my customers from YouTube, which is interesting. So yeah, I'm showing, you know, kind of things I'm working on, and then I also have kind of, I guess, the culmination of the pinnacle of what I do on that channel is my like process documentary.
Yeah.
So that's like where I show how I make the knives that I sell to my customers. And that tends to be the thing that brings a lot of my customers in, is, you know, like seeing the process. But yeah, longer term, like I'm going to be, so like I've already been filming segments for some parts of the DLC coding system. Like that's going to be a video sharing how I like make some of the components that, you know, are really expensive if you buy them off the shelf, that kind of thing. So yeah, it's sharing knowledge. So on.
Somebody
at the door.
This isn't a bit, by the way.
No.
If for the listeners, this isn't a guest we've
Thank
got.
You. I have no idea what that is. It can stay at the door. Sorry, we can cut that bit out. Yes. So, long-term goal with the channel is honestly just to like share what I love doing and hopefully help spread knowledge and you know, to engage people and show them how I make my knives.
I'd say, looking at my sort of browsing history, which most people don't need to be doing, looking at my browsing history, I'd say the majority of that is probably YouTube stuff now.
Yeah.
It's like my go-to source of when I need to find how to do something, rather than just Google it and, you know, read a text document. I'm generally now looking for videos, and I'd say maybe over the last 2 years that has happened, and it's now almost exclusively doing that. Most of my searches are via YouTube now.
I'm kind of the same on anything that's kind of a common thing that people might do. Totally the same. And yeah, part of the thing that I want to do with my channel is to, you know, give back, you know, because like I learned knife making from a lot of different people, but, you know, all of those people gave their knowledge away freely. You know, I want to do the same thing, right? So
yeah,
I've been on a YouTube kick the last week or so watching chemistry videos.
Oh geez, did you see the video that I sent a link to for you? Stuff made here.
Yes, yeah. So you sent me a link to the robotically controlled pull cue
pool cue
that makes you play pool better. Yeah,
it's funny because you said the same thing to me, actually. It keeps popping up in various feeds and so on, and I've been seeing it for weeks and I've just never got around to watching it.
Right.
And yeah, it's 20 minutes of it's just done very, very well. So this guy, Stuff Made Here is the channel. He does sort of incredibly sort of complex sort of fun projects, but he explains things so, so well, and it's engaging, they're funny. Yep. But yeah, the basis of this particular video was a pool cue, a pool stick that basically doesn't miss. It's incredible, and he's done one in the past with a basketball hoop where he'd pay people $100 if they could miss. Because it was impossible. It would have been possible, but for the benefit of the video, you couldn't miss. Yeah, just really, really clever dude, and really enjoyed watching his stuff.
Yeah, and it's like I have to give him a lot of credit too for the way the videos are structured, because it's really hard to make a video on a technical topic that isn't boring as shit.
Yeah.
And he does a very good job of that.
And he managed to rope his wife into it and all these different
things. Yeah, and she always looks super grumpy about being there, which I love.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if you imagine have you seen the Mark Rober videos?
One or two of them.
He's very good at explaining sort of complex things, but generally for younger, for sort of kids can understand really complex stuff. So this is similar, but a lot more complex, and for people with adult brains, I suppose. Right. Really good. So I'll make sure I put that down in the notes as well. Stuff Made Here on YouTube. It's well worth a watch.
The other YouTube channel I've been watching is Niall Redd. I don't know if you've heard of him.
No.
So it's a chemistry channel, but he basically does a lot of chemistry stuff that you really should never, ever do at home. Like, does cyanide really smell like almonds?
Oh, right. Okay. I've got it here, actually. Yeah. Right. Making laughing gas and doing these. Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, to work out whether cyanide really smells like almonds, he has to smell cyanide.
Oh, geez.
Just doing stuff like that, right? So yeah, it's super interesting. I actually I learned a trick from him that I used in the shop the other day. I was cleaning the lathe.
Were you making bromine?
There you go. Yeah, I was making bromine, using it to clean the lathe. No, I was degreasing parts in my ultrasonic cleaner for the lathe, and then all the cleaning fluid was just like black and horrible. And oftentimes when he's filtering stuff, he just jams like a cotton ball in the bottom of a funnel and just filters through that. And I was like, oh, okay, I'll give it a try with some paper towel. You know, that's all I've got. It worked great.
Oh, well.
And then I had clean ultrasonic stuff that I could keep using rather than chucking it out. You
know? Nice.
It's silly, but it works.
Just looking at his channel now, and he's getting like 13 million views and so on for the video. That's crazy.
Yeah, he's got like 2.5 million subscribers for a chemistry channel, which is amazing.
Wow. It's incredible to see these people who are, very good at what they do, but now seeing YouTube as a career, and it's amazing to see. Amazing. So we just mentioned Mark Rober. He's actually doing an engineering course online that people can sign up to. And it's one of those sort of open courses where everybody who signs up to the course, it's time sensitive, so you all sign up at the same time. And once a week you all get together online and you explain what you're trying to make, and everybody sort of helps out and gives you instruction as well. And he'll make, personal videos for you, for your particular problem and that kind of thing. It's a really sort of clever way of, using, the fame that he's got from YouTube to earn more money, I suppose. It's very clever. Great. So it's that time of the week. Space news. Space news. Now, I did see what happened this week, and
I saw that you updated the document. I was like, wow, Craig's actually paying attention now.
Yes, and I thought it was hilarious.
It was. So for those of you that don't know, I didn't even know that this was going to happen. I just happened to catch it on YouTube just before it went live. SpaceX did another launch of Starship, their prototype rocket, to try and send it up to 12 kilometers and then have it do the belly flop and then have it do a landing. And it actually landed.
Sort of. It did land.
It landed, but then it was leaning a bit.
It landed.
It was leaning a bit, So apparently one of the landing legs failed when it landed. And apparently the landing legs are apparently just like temporary shitty you know, man, maybe that'll work kind of things.
Yeah.
And they, yeah, they kind of worked. But yeah, so it sat on the landing pad for like 10 minutes after landing, and then it kind of slowly caught fire, and then it gently exploded.
Yeah. So yeah. The clip that I saw was, it was edited down because there wasn't this 10-minute gap. Right. But on the NASA site where they had the hosts and they're talking through what happened, and they're all very excited. It landed and everybody's talking. It's very sort of congratulatory and everybody was really pumped about it. And as the guy is talking, there's a screen in it behind him and you just see this huge explosion. And he's like, what the fuck? It's very funny to see.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, these are prototype rockets. Mm. I actually, as I said last week, you know, with in regards to like the Perseverance rover, it's just a very different engineering philosophy. Like, ULA and NASA, they have this philosophy that like everything has to work perfectly the first time.
Yeah.
And so they engineer things to the nth degree and try to make it work perfectly the first time. And it doesn't. You know, but like they still continue with that goal.
Yeah.
Whereas SpaceX has the startup mantra, move fast and break things.
Yes. You know? Yeah. So there's less cost associated with each sort of failure.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
And they get to, one of the other things that they do is kind of drawn from the software world, which is continuous integration. So every part of the rocket is integrated, you know, it's fitted together and tested together, and the engineers work with each other throughout the whole process. Apparently, within SpaceX, an engineer in any, like, people aren't really pigeonholed.
Mm.
If you're working on one part of the rocket and then, you know, a change to another part of the rocket would make your life easier or better or remove parts, then Elon, like, considers it your job to go off to the other part and fix it, make it better.
Yeah.
Whereas in within NASA and the traditional engineering companies, it's very much like, you are making this part.
Yeah, every sort of siloed off with their responsibility for that one particular thing. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. So, and like that brings to leads to a lot of problems. Like the SLS, the Space Launch System, from ULA is their like competitor with the Falcon rocket.
Mm.
But they haven't actually put all the pieces together. You know, like the first time that all of the pieces are going to go together is on the launch pad.
Oh, geez.
You know, so, like, it's just a very, very different philosophy, and I think that the SpaceX philosophy is much more applicable to, like, how you and I make things, how smaller companies make things. It's a much more reasonable way of doing it.
Yeah.
And it keeps the cost, like, way, way, way down.
Yeah.
You know?
Wow.
So, yeah, you know, a couple of explosions are inevitable, though, right?
Yeah, and that seems to be their attitude to it, isn't it? It's like, well, you know, you mentioned this before. They'll half expect things to explode because they're testing something new, and if it doesn't explode, yep, they don't know what the limits are and these things.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they constantly do things that are risky, you know, which is very interesting. So they, like, recently with one of their landings, so they were doing a landing on their, like, automated drone ship that acts as, like, a landing pad. So they sent a rocket up, and this is not one of their prototype rockets. This is like an actual launch.
Hmm.
But they were doing what they call an envelope expansion landing. So, you know, NASA has very, very tight constraints for like how much wind there can be and what the temperature can be and so on for doing launches.
Perfect conditions, and, yeah.
Yeah, and SpaceX wants to push, you know, push the boundaries of that so that launches get scrubbed less often. You know, launches get cancelled less often, so that landings get cancelled less often. Because when they're doing a launch and a landing, the wind and everything has to be right both at the launch site and at the landing site, because they're landing their rocket. So they did what's called an envelope expansion, where they're basically like, well, it's too windy at the landing site, we might crash, but let's go for it anyway. Like, we need to find out what the limits are, you know?
Wow.
So, yeah, as I said, I just have a lot of respect for that approach.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I think, you know, you talked about, you know, that's Elon's sort of mantra, I suppose. But that goes right through to sort of Tesla as well, doesn't it? You know, even with, you know, cars that are, I say in production, but cars that are actually out on the road, they're getting, you know, software updates and, you know, and you can sign up to beta programs and things like that for what is effectively a killing machine that can travel 150 miles an hour and kill somebody. But
yeah, and I'm not, I'm not 100% sure how I feel about that. Mm. I mean, it's easy with the rockets because, you know, they evacuate the area and there's no one on board and they send them up and, you know, it's fine. But yeah, for cars on the road, like, but different solutions, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. Right, I think that's a good time to call an end to the show. We've covered what? A bit of CNCing again, space again.
And some space.
You need to do some research on Harry and Meghan for next week.
It shows where my priorities are, right? I've been watching YouTube videos on chemistry, but I have no idea what the mainstream news is.
There's been no getting away from it for me. My wife is just like, on Twitter, constantly. Have you seen? Just, have you seen this? Have you seen what they've said about this? And I'm like, oh, jeez.
Right. That's very funny.
One of those things.
Go buy yourself a power supply for that laser. Get back in business.
That's what I'm going to do immediately. So, yeah, RS components, definitely. I shall do that.
I'm sure there are alternatives. That's the only one I know of in Europe.
Yeah, it's one of those power supplies with the three outputs, you know, so it's 24 volts, easy. 12 easy. Volts, and 5 volts.
Yeah,
and hopefully I can get something a bit better than that. I said, they haven't got much confidence in the one they're sending me because they said they're going to send two. So... It's obviously a problem that they've had before, but I am just hoping that it hasn't done any other unseen damage. But what was quite funny, so when I took if you imagine the bottom of the laser, it's basically like almost like a PC case, you know, that those ATX cases. Slide the lid off and cut my fingers as you always do with those things, and the big box, the Raycus box, which is Raycus, so they're sort of. One of the sort of leading suppliers of fiber lasers, I suppose.
Right.
It's got Raycus, designed and manufactured in Wuhan. Like, oh, geez. So not only is this nearly blown up my shop, this is now going to give me some sort of virus that's going to kill me. And yeah. Wuhan.
Uh-huh.
That's a show. We shall speak to you again next week. Thank you all for listening. Bye for now.
Have a great week, everyone.
Nice. That was nice and pacey then.
If you like this show, take a look at our other shows made for makers just like you at www.makery.network. For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5HETIDE.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5HETIDE.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.